Ramble.
I don't really like doing chores around the house, I'm going to be honest with you, and I especially used to hate doing laundry. It was just one of my more tedious tasks. It takes so much time, and I often feel tempted to not even bother sorting out my clothes. But I've been trying to motivate myself to get a lot more organized, and I finally found a way to make doing my chores so much more interesting, so much more engaging, and that's by listening to audiobooks on Audible. You guys know me, there is nothing like playing a good psychological thriller. So obviously, that's what I've been listening to. I'm currently listening to The Housemaid by Freida McFadden. The main character, Millie, is out on parole and she's desperate for her job. She doesn't have any money. She's living out of her car and she gets this opportunity to be this rich family's housemaid. Millie agrees, even though there's just something really strange about the Winchesters. Especially the wife, Nina. She just seems to love finding ways to make Millie's life very difficult. The family is hiding something, and Millie is hiding something, and there's just so much tension between Millie and the husband. It's one of those stories that you can't stop listening to, and I can't wait to finish it and start the next audiobook in this series. But if thriller is not your thing, don't worry. Audible lets you pick from thousands of titles to find the perfect soundtrack to your day. You can find audiobooks from any genre, fiction, nonfiction, wellness, self-help, but they also have podcasts like this one, guided wellness programs, comedy, and originals. Living life without using Audible is like eating food with no seasoning. Sure, you still get your nutrients in, but it's missing that extra flavor, you know? So if you want to spice up your day, I highly recommend Audible. Audible members can keep one title a month to keep from the entire catalog. New members can try Audible now free for 30 days. Visit audible.com/rotten or text rotten to 500-500. That's audible.com/rotten or text rotten to 500-500 to try Audible free for 30 days.
Bada bing, bada
boom. It's Minnesota, and today we're talking about Johann Jack Unterweger. Now, if you guys watched the last podcast, then you know that this has a connection to the Cecil Hotel. I know, this is my first time doing it. It's very professional. Thank you very much. Where the podcasts are like connected. There's like a storyline. Ooh, is this like a season one? Okay, I won't get ahead of myself. So we're talking about the Vienna Strangler today. This is a serial killer. I mean, the Cecil Hotel is known for housing serial killers, whether it's credible or not, such as Richard Ramirez, the Night Stalker. But in this situation, Jack Unterweger actually stayed there 100%. A serial killer stayed at the Cecil Hotel. Now, he is not just any serial killer. He's a very strange one. So he is actually from Austria, and most of his victims are Austrian women. But he did come to LA. He stayed at the Cecil Hotel. He went on ride-alongs with the LAPD and killed 3 women in Los Angeles on his little vacation. He said, listen, I need a vacation from killing in Austria. And he came to LA and killed more and then went back. They call him the Vienna Strangler, the poet of death, author, journalist, poet, children's book writer, playwright, kidnapper, assaulter, rapist, murderer, and a prison inmate on the motherfucking side. Philanthropist, advocate, activist. Yeah, it's just a lot. Like, he was doing the most. And at first I thought I wanted to tell this story in chronological order, like you would do with most serial killer cases, because you're like, okay, like what's going on with his childhood? But I don't want to do that. I don't want to do that necessarily, because here's where it gets interesting. We're going to start with his first prison experience. Now, imagine you're in Austria.
How many experiences has he had?
He's had like 1.5. And I say a half because you'll understand later. So he's in prison in Austria. Now, Austria during this time, they were just kind of going through a lot. Like, they were having different political parties, changing powers, and it was intense. So he's in prison. So all these Austrian elites, they're sitting around having some tea, having some coffee. I don't know what they drink. I'm like, water. And so they're sitting there and they're talking about, did you hear, did you read that on the newspaper? There is this man in prison who has been charged and convicted for murdering an 18-year-old girl, and he's been writing these short stories, he writes these poems, he actually even wrote a bunch of children's books, and all of these moms all across Austria were reading these children's books to their kid at nighttime to be like, hey, let me help you go to sleep by reading this serial killer's children's book. Now, obviously, he wrote it in a way that wasn't like, hey, I'm going to tell you the story of Ted Bundy while you go to sleep. It was, you know, it was very like straight up like a children's book, right? But people were just getting really intrigued.
Why are people buying that?
Exactly. So these Austrian elite, they're like, you know, it's kind of crazy. It seems like he has like the gift of words. Did you know when he actually went to prison, like let's say like 10 years ago, he was completely uneducated. He was barely literate, and he taught himself how to read and write behind those prison walls. And he's writing all of these amazing, oh my gosh, isn't this amazing? That is what the upper elite in Austria were saying about him. And a lot of people pointed out that it probably has to do with the fact that, you know, when you think of like a novelist or someone writing a book, what do you think? And I don't know if it's biased because I live in LA, but I think of someone who is sitting at Starbucks, who is sitting at Coffee Bean.
Yeah, like on the train.
Yeah. And then I would say, like, out of the 10 people, maybe half of them have a solid book, you know? And then the other half are just sitting there at Starbucks, refilling their Starbucks cup and just looking smart. But you're not really writing, are you, sir? Like, you know what I mean? Maybe it's that. Mm-hmm. So a lot of people said for these Austrian elite, they had so much of that. All of these men who, like, thought they had all these crazy thoughts in their head. And it's like, no, Kevin, nobody thinks that's revolutionary, right? Right. But then here comes this guy who's convicted of murder and he's writing about his life. It's kind of like, wow.
Is it inspirational for them?
It wasn't inspirational, but they said it was raw. It was complex. It was deep, dude. Now, I think that this is a situation of, I'm sure it wasn't the shittiest writing in the world, and I'm sure it was better than anything I would have written. But I'm also sure that it probably has to do with the fact that he's a convicted murderer. So suddenly there's like weight to his words when there shouldn't be, right? And so they're reading it and everyone just kind of forgot that this is literally a murder that they're reading about. And he would tell his childhood stories, he would tell his, you know, adult stories, and everyone fell in love with him. So much so that while he's sitting in prison serving multiple life sentences, he cannot be released. They start petitioning. They said, listen, this guy needs to come out. This guy, Jack Unterweger, have you heard of him? Have you heard of him? He needs to be released from prison because, wow, I mean, this guy is the poster child for prison reform. There is something about his words. He knows what he did wrong. He's not even trying to, but you know, put the guilt on anyone else. He's not even trying to say, I'm an innocent man. Like, he's just changed.
So his strategy worked.
Yes. So 6 years into his sentence that was supposed to be a life sentence, he published a full-on memoir called Purgatory, or sometimes translated as Trip to Prison, Report of a Guilty Man. And that was highly regarded. It was even published by highly regarded literary magazines at the time. He became an Austrian bestseller. Yeah, an Austrian bestseller. And they saw him as a victim in all of this. They were like, you are a murderer, but you too are also a victim. Like, that's what they said about it.
Victim of what?
Of life, of childhood, of misfortune, of poverty. They were like, this is so deep. And the beginning of the book actually starts with him contemplating suicide. And he decides not to commit suicide in the beginning of the book because he says, listen, I just had this thought in my head. I'm not going to kill myself because I can be saved. I can be fixed. Like, imagine someone murdered someone that you love and they're saying, I can be fixed.
And I bet back in the days, they probably don't have a lot of true crime podcasts.
Yeah.
So they're like, oh, wow, this is a human.
Yeah, this person's real. You know what I mean? Yeah. Maybe there's not enough CSI back in the day to be like, ah, nah, this guy's going to do it again. Right. So, yeah, he straight up was like, listen, I can be fixed and I can change. And I know where I went wrong. And I know why that happened. Right. Now, the Austrian elite, they're his main fan base. They're like, holy cow, they're obsessed with him. They're like, listen, he had a mom who was a sex worker. His aunt was a sex worker. She got murdered by a client. He was abused by his alcoholic grandfather, according to his memoir that he wrote. And it's just so sad, no?
So they have the power to...
That's what I'm saying. Kind of, yes and no. So I think it was kind of a situation of a perfect storm. So they read all of these clippings, they read all of these short stories, his memoir, and then it gets even crazier. So they started putting him on TV for television readings while he was in prison. I don't know who authorized this, who said this was okay, but I guess it's like a prison interview that you see on, like, I don't know, NBC sometimes. And so he would read parts of his memoir on television, and he does not look like a murderer. So he actually looks very thin, almost boyish is how people kind of describe him, like, not like a man, just kind of young looking, very meek, looks very, you know, soft, like a softy. And so everyone's like, oh my gosh, this is him authentically crying out. He's tender. We need to get him pardoned. So they start a petition. Now, timing is really important here because the Social Democratic Party had recently taken power and they are really into prison reform. Okay. So they were like looking for just poster children for, hey, you can do something horrendous, but you go into our prison system, we're all about reforming you. We're not here to just like lock you up. We're here to change you and then have you re-enter back into society. And this was the perfect person. I mean, he's well loved by moms, by the upper elite, by rich people, by intellectuals. I mean, how can you not get behind this? And so people just started immediately flocking to this idea. Some of them even visited Jack, some of these people, and they believed that he was in, you know, he was in the process of reform. Even these politicians went. Nobel Prize winners even went to go visit him, and they signed petitions. So one, for example, is a woman by the name of Alfried Jelinek. I'm gonna say that wrong, I'm sorry. She's an Austrian playwright and a novelist, and she writes a lot about female sexuality, sexual abuse, battle of the sexes, you know, kind of about the principal driving forces in a relationship that she always said were power and aggression. Like, that is what drives any relationship. And she was kind of widely known for her feminist stance on everything. She signed the petition for him to be released.
What?
Yeah, and it's going to get weirder once you find out what he was convicted for, the murder of an 18-year-old girl. And it was incredibly just sadistic in nature. So she signed this and she was like, listen, that autobiography had clarity and great literary quality. There was another man by the name of Gunter William Grass, and he was a novelist, poet, playwright, illustrator, graphic artist, sculptor, and also another Nobel Peace Prize winner. A Nobel Literary Prize winner, and he fell in love with Jack's work. And so they all started sending letters to the president of Austria and was like, hey, you need to pardon him. He's one of us. Like, he's good. And so the president looked at this and was like, listen, I can't do that. I can't do that. Not because this is a vicious murderer, but because he has to at least serve the minimum sentence for murder, which is 15 years, and he's only served 10. So call me in 5 years. So for the next 5 years, I mean, he just reveled in this glory. He's like, listen, I'm going to get out in 5 years. I already know it because, you know, even the prison governor, like, I guess what you would call like the warden here in the U.S., he was saying, we will never find a prisoner so well prepared for freedom. What? What are you saying? So he stays in prison for the next 5 years waiting for his release, and he does more televised readings. His book, Purgatory, was even turned into a film, and he was allowed to leave prison to go attend the premiere at the film festival. What are you saying? And everyone just kept saying, this is not the story of him being a vicious, savage, sadistic murderer. This is a story of an abandoned child, a victim, one that we have to take care of, one that we have to shelter, and he knows what he did was wrong. And so he became a celebrity. So after serving 15 years, he gets up for parole and he gets released. Even during his psychiatric evaluation, the psychiatrist said he has been completely rehabilitated. His writing was what he needed to express himself and get over those complex emotions of being abandoned as a kid. Can you imagine? They said he was abandoned as a kid. He murdered someone. All he needed to do was just write it down. Just like journal a little bit, like bullet journal.
So I'm assuming all of these is going to bite them in the ass.
Yeah. So in May 1990, he was officially released a free man. And during this time, you know, he was 24 when he went to jail. He was 39 when he came out. So not even that old. He was super excited. I mean, now he's a celebrity. He's respected. He's not even treated like a felon or an inmate. You know, also, side note, I don't believe in that. Like, I am all for prison reform. This just happens to be a story where it's not good. And so he was respected. He's rich. He buys clothes, exotic cars. He bought a Rolex like the first week that he came out. Like, he was doing all of it. Jeez. He was making a ton of money from all of his book sales. He was on magazine covers. And this this is where it gets even crazier. He even got into politics. Like, he didn't run for office or anything, but he was heavily involved because he would give interviews about prison reform. And he was like this poster child. And everyone was like, hey, we are the Democratic Party and we want to push this prison reform thing. And we want him at the center of it. Like, we want him to talk to the people. I mean, this is insane. Yeah. It was so insane that a TV, like a television network, offered him a job as a reporter. They were like, you are so good at with what you do. You have insight that a lot of other reporters wouldn't have. You know what it's like in prison. You know what prison reform is like. I mean, you'd be perfect for the job. Mm-hmm. So he gets super excited and he's making all this money, still in the public eye, going to interview people, speaking on prison reform, loving it. Now, what was his favorite topic to report on? European sex workers. And that was also his primary choice of victim.
I don't get it.
Yeah. So he would report on European sex workers and he would also murder them.
Oh, wait. So he's murdering as a reporter?
Yeah.
But nobody knows that, obviously. Nope.
So he's going to go on.
So he's on a murder spree.
Yeah. So he's going to go on to murder like 10 more people.
Wow.
So he wasn't considered a serial killer when he went to prison. So there's reports that there's 2 murders that he committed prior to going to jail, but he has only been convicted of 1 the first time. So let's get into his childhood. Now, mind you, like I said, a lot of this information is from his book Purgatory. So you have to take it with a little grain of salt. And I'm going to catch you guys up to how he got to prison. So he was born in Austria at the end of World War II. And this was a really rough time for Austria. So this is when Germany and Austria were occupied by Allied forces. So they had a ton of American soldiers all up in their business being like, hey, we won the war. So like, we're going to tell you exactly what to do. And he was born from all of this. So Austria at the time, they had women who were getting impregnated. I hate that word, who were getting pregnant with American soldiers. There was about like 30,000 babies that were born this way. So this is kind of difficult because once the soldiers leave, they just kind of leave. A lot of them still had families at home in America or whatever country they were coming from, and they would just not be a father figure in these kids' life. They would just completely leave financially, emotionally, mentally, just physically, all of that jazz. And Johann Jack Unterweger was born in this situation. So his mom's name is Theresia Unterweger, and a lot of sources claim that she was a barmaid and a waitress, and Jack claims that she was a sex worker. I mean, you know, do with it what you will. And his dad was Jack Becker, an American soldier. So they do it. They have this baby. Now he leaves back to America. So the dad's gone. And now Theresia is like, how am I going to find work? Like, this is so difficult. I'm a single mom. Like, there's not a lot of jobs. This is literally right after World War II. Like, it's just not going to be the most booming economy. And we lost, right? So she's freaking out. And so she's like, okay, I'm going to do what I can to try to support this baby. So she resorts to fraud and theft and petty crime. And she gets arrested for it while she's heavily pregnant. Now, I couldn't find a report if maybe what she stole wasn't that big of a deal or what happened, but she was released like almost immediately. So they were like, here, you're free to go. So she gives birth to Jack, and he writes that this is a really difficult time because by the time he was 3 years old, she was doing sex work during the first 3 years. I don't even know how you remember that.
Exactly. Are you kidding me?
Yeah. And so, you know, once he turns 3, she gets arrested again. And so he's sent off to live with her dad, his grandpa. And this grandpa was evil. That's what Jack says. They lived in this one-bedroom cabin. He's an alcoholic. And he used Jack to steal farm animals. I don't know if, like, Jack was, like, supposed to go to the door of, like, a farmer and, like, distract them. Like, oh, this little young boy doesn't know directions back to his house. And, like, the grandpa would go and, like, I don't know, steal a cow or something. But he was, like, he used me. He said it was almost like being a, quote, slave under his grandpa. He would just say all of these really intense things. And a lot of people said that this isn't true. Like, a lot of people who knew Jack's grandpa was, like, okay, he's a rough fellow. Like, let's be real. But anyone who lived through World War II, anyone who lived in poverty, was a rough fellow, but that doesn't mean that they're abusive, and it doesn't mean that they're alcoholics and just like want to kill you as a grandson. Yeah. And people were just really upset by this, but he would constantly push this narrative of, I was never given enough food to eat. I was always so cold. Why was it so cold? I never had a mother figure. My grandpa, all he would do is bring in sex workers into our little cabin, which, did I tell you? It was a one-bedroom cabin. And so I just had this revolving door of just sex workers just in and out of my grandpa's home that I shared with him. And I would be hunched over in the little corner being like, Grandpapa, when can I get another sweater? It's -3 degrees outside and all I have is this tank top, this crop top. He made it really dramatic is what I'm trying to say, okay? Now, my apologies if part of the story was true, but it's just really hard to believe that it was, especially because a woman came forward and she said, wait a minute, like, I know Jack Unterweger, and I was actually his step aunt. So my mom was dating Jack's grandpa. So I was like the grandpa's stepdaughter. Daughter, right? So that would be like a step aunt, right?
Yeah.
And my mom like helped raise Jack. They were married for quite some time and she helped a lot in raising Jack. So what are you talking about, like revolving door of sex workers, you know? What are you saying? Also, he was never abusive. I mean, he's got like this rough exterior, but he's a super kind person and he would never do anything to hurt you. Like, what are you talking about, Jack? But everyone was like, shh, this is a good story. We don't want to hear that. So nobody listened to her. She tried so many times to tell reporters like, hey, don't believe this guy. While Jack was in prison, she came out and was like, I read this memoir. I know Jack Unterweger. No. And everyone was like, no, that doesn't, no, we don't like that. Like, this is a story about an abused child, okay? Sit your ass down, lady. You're being rude. So he just went on, right? So he claims that, and this is backed up by actual evidence, that he was in and out of prison since he was really young. So he just couldn't really keep a job. He would, you know, try to pimp out women. He would sexually assault sex workers. And yeah, there was a lot of theft involved. So by the time that he was like 24, he had over 16 different charges. Wow. And so he was in and out of prison the whole time. Now, he said during this time, he met a woman. He kept searching for his birth mom because he's like, "Mommy, where are you?" I know it sounds so heartless, but like he's so evil. So that's why he's like, "Mommy, where are you?" And so he's searching for his mom and he meets up with his aunt by the name of Anna. And he just like fell in love, not in a weird way, but in the way of like, wow, I finally have
this is a different aunt.
Yeah. Yeah. Like this is, you know, his real mom's like direct sister. And he's like, wow, I finally have like someone, a mother figure, like someone to love me, someone to take care of me. And she was a sex worker. And one day she didn't come home and he found out that she had been murdered by one of her clients. Now, this would be an incredibly traumatic story if it were true. But there is no evidence that his mom, Teresia, had any sisters. I am assuming that he's making this up to like, oh, sex worker murdered, because it comes into play later. And she was the only one that mattered to me. She was the only one that I loved. Or it could be like, maybe there was a woman who was like, yeah, I'm your aunt, but I just think that's highly unlikely. And so even Teresia herself came forward and was like, yeah, I don't have any sisters, so I don't know what he's talking about.
Oh, the mother came forward. Yeah,
she was like, I don't have a sister. So then who is Aunt Anna?
She doesn't have a sister.
Yeah. So, I mean, again, like I said, it's kind of up in the air if either Jack lied about it or he was lied to. I think he's lying about it, you know?
Right. He has more to gain by
exactly
lying.
And so he's lying about this in his book, and then he claims when
and I think it's also hard to lie about like, oh, I don't have a sister, yeah, while you did have a sister.
Yeah,
that's kind of, you know what I mean?
That's what I, yeah,
that's weird. Yeah,
that's so strange. And so records show that Jack was arrested at 20 years old because he kidnapped a 16-year-old girl and tried to force her into sex work. He was trying to pimp her out, so he gets arrested for pimping fraud. Just wait and see. Listen, if you are anxious like me, this entire phrase just makes you a little bit stressed out, because like, what do you mean? Just wait and see what? Like, why do I have to wait? Why can't I just see it now? And that has usually been the traditional guidance with fertility. It's always been just wait and see. Like, let's see if you can have a baby. Like, just wait and see. It just doesn't make sense. And now it especially doesn't make sense because we have tools to help us plan and track everything in our lives, whether that's wellness, you know, finances, career, school. Why is fertility still a wait and see type of thing? And it doesn't have to be. I love modern fertility, and that's kind of why it was created. It's an easy, affordable way to test your fertility hormones at home with a simple finger prick. You mail it in with a prepaid label and you'll get personalized results within 10 days. Traditional testing with a doctor can cost over $1,000, but modern fertility only costs $159 to get the same exact information. And if you guys go to modernfertility.com/rotten, you can get $20 off your test. Also, it's amazing because if you have HSA or FSA, you can use those dollars on Modern Fertility. So you get these insights on how many eggs you have, your hormone levels, and other important fertility factors. The results actually go really deep into every single hormone, what it means. You can also talk one-on-one with a fertility nurse to review your results and options for your next steps. So if you guys want kids today, or maybe you want it in the future, you need information to make the decision that's best for you. And it's not just a just wait and see type of thing. So right now, Modern Fertility is offering you guys $20 off the test when you go to modernfertility.com/rotten. That means your test will cost $139 instead of the hundreds or thousands it could cost at the doctor's office. So get $20 off your fertility test when you go to modernfertility.com/rotten. What is that? That's modernfertility.com/rotten for the people in the back. Pimping frauds, yeah. He was arrested for that. So once he gets released from prison, he continues to harass and sexually assault women, particularly sex workers. And so another situation was he picked up a young woman, offered to drive her home, and instead he was like, actually, I'm going to drive to this wooded area. And he drops her off in the wooded area, drags her into the woods, sexually assaults her with a steel pipe, and masturbates while he does this.
Jeez.
So he was diagnosed with two things. One of them was narcissistic personality disorder, which really makes sense in this situation, which also can go to show a lot of the times some things that will happen with people like Jack, who do have this diagnosis, is that they will lie about things to get what they want. And I'm not saying everyone who has this diagnosis, but some, right? And Jack was one of them. So that's why it's extra intense. Now, he also showed signs of sexual sadism disorder, which, you know, a lot of the crimes that he commits kind of has evidence of this. He likes hurting his victims while pleasuring himself. He loves the power of that. Just real nasty stuff. And so he gets arrested again. Then this time he's like, listen, I don't really like jail. So he smuggles drugs into prison and attempts to take his own life and gets sent to the psychiatric ward. And it was a failed attempt. And eventually he gets released again. Now, it's so hard to find, you know, records of why was he released? Like, why is he committing violent crimes against women? And they're just like, okay, like, you're good to go. So when he's out again, this time he decides, you know what, I'm going to commit my first murder. So this took place in Switzerland. Now, the reason that he was never actually convicted of this one. So there's a woman by the name of Maritza Horvat, and she is a 25-year-old Croatian woman, and she was a maid. So she goes into the city. She's spending time with her friends. She's married. She's like, listen, I work all the time. The other times I'm home with my husband. I'm finally just like getting a girl's day, enjoying herself. And she was supposed to be home that night. So her husband's waiting on her and waiting, and she doesn't come home. So he's like, okay, like, what's going on with Maritza? Where is she? Like, this doesn't make any sense. So he starts asking all of her friends, like, have you seen my wife? Have you seen my wife? All of them say no, like, we don't know what's going on. The next morning, breaking news, a group of young boys saw a body floating in the local river. So they start screaming. A bunch of fishermen were nearby and they heard. They rush over, and it was a woman's body. It was Maritza. So she was found naked from the waist down. Her wrists were bound with a necktie. Her ankles were tied together using her own stockings, and she was gagged with like a first aid kit. Like, there was like what you would expect in a first aid kit, like kind of like the sports wrap, like the gauze, and that was like wrapped around her. There was also like the medical tape that was wrapped around her head, as seeming like she was gagged and almost strangled with it. Her face was bloated, so it indicated that she was badly beaten before she died. And the only lead that the police have, they didn't have any other lead except for this freaking necktie, because all of the other things that she had on her were either her own articles of clothing or were from like a generic first aid kit. Like, how are you going to get information from this? So they take this necktie. They see that it's made in Vienna, Austria. So this was in Switzerland, but they're like, okay, this is in Vienna, Austria. They take it to the exact, they can even locate it down to the shop who sold this tie.
Wow.
I guess like this was before the days of fast fashion. So they're like, we can actually tell you which store sold it. So they go to that store and they say, hey, listen, who bought this tie? Like, how many people have you sold this to? And all of them are like, oh my God, I remember that tie being sold. That was like a month ago. So I don't really remember. Like, it was just some dude. I don't remember anything else. So they're like, what? Like, that's it? You just don't remember anything? And they're like, no, I mean, I think it was like a young dude. That's about it. So from that point, the case just gets colder and colder and colder, right? And the detectives are trying to work on it, but there's really no other leads. Now, during this, I mean, he's getting away with it. That was the work of Jack, and he's just living his life still. And so he meets a girlfriend by the name of Barbara. They
start
dating.
Was this ever confessed or...
So the detective will actually keep telling police officers, hey, I know that you guys have a serial killer on the loose, and I think it's Jack Unterweger, because, you know, this makes sense. We'll get into it. So he meets a girl by the name of Barbara, and they start dating, and they come up with this genius idea. They're like, hey, I love dating you. You love dating me. But you know what would be amazing? If we had a little bit of money. And so they're like, okay, well, how do we get money? We can't get jobs. That's lame. Let's go rob your parents, Barbara. So they're like, good idea. So they decided to drive the 90 minutes to Barbara's parents' house, and they would hope that they're not home, and they would break in, they would steal all the cash and all the belongings, all these valuables, and they would go sell it, and they would have all this money that they could share together as a loving couple. So they make that 1.5 hour drive to Barbara's parents, and they look inside, and her parents are inside. So she's like, there's no way. Like, they know I'm their kid. Like, they're gonna look at me and be like, are you trying to rob me? Like, it's not even a situation of like, who are these intruders? And so they're like, damn it, but we made this 90 minute drive. Like, what do you mean? We're just gonna go back home another 90 minutes our Mercedes? Like, that doesn't make sense. That's gonna be shitty. So they're looking around, and that's when Barbara sees an old school friend walking home, and her name is Margaret. So she's like, oh my gosh, that's my old school friend. I remember her. And Jack's like, well, why don't we try to scam her? Like, why don't we try to rob her? Because I don't want to go home empty-handed. Barbara's like, yeah, totally. I'm down 100%. So Barbara, the plan was that Barbara was going to lure Margaret into the car. She'd be like, hey, like, I haven't seen you in so long. Like, oh, this is my friend. Like, come, like, let's go, like, grab a bite to eat. Like, let's go grab a drink at a bar. And they would drive around. They would get her super disoriented so that she wouldn't know exactly where they were. And they would rob her and just, like, kick her out of the car. So that would give them time to flee, right? So they open the window and they're like, Margaret. And she's like, oh my God, Barbara. And she's like, get in. Like, let's talk. Like, I haven't talked to you in so long. She gets into the car. They start driving down and they're just having small talk. Margaret says that she was just getting home from going to the bowling alley with some friends. It was just very casual. And that's when Jack asks, hey, do you want to go get a drink with us? Like, I'd love to get to know you. And so she's like, yeah, sounds good. So they start driving towards the bar. Now, towards the end of this, when they were about to approach the bar, that's when Jack turns around as he's driving and asks Barbara, do you have anything else to say to your friend? Barbara says, no. And so Jack pulls over on the side of the road, grabs Margaret by her clothing and drags her to the front seat. And that's when he starts tying her up. He ties her up with Barbara's coat, like belt. So her hands are tied. She's sitting in the front seat. She's like, what is going on? Like, I'm scared, Barbara. Like, can you tell me what's going on? Like, what is going on? And so Jack's like, give me all your money. And she's like, okay, well, here's the thing. You're not going to like this because I only have $20 on me. Like, that's it. I swear, I promise I don't have anything else. Why would I try to hide it from you? I only have $20. And he starts yelling at her because it's a really small amount. He's like, mm-hmm. You're wasting my time. Like, do you know time is money? And so she's like, okay, everyone calm down. Don't do anything crazy. Like, I have money at my parents' house. My parents have money. They always keep cash around. I can take you there. I can take you. We can go in and we can grab all the cash and whatever else you want. And we'll just do that. Mm-hmm. And so he's like, okay, sounds good. So they drive back to Margaret's mom's place and they grab a stash of clothing. And all she had in cash was $60. So then they bring Margaret back into the car and they start driving out of town. Now, this is when Margaret knows something bad's going to happen because it's kind of like, I mean, I could have just stayed there and you could have just driven away with these things, right? Mm-hmm. And Jack just keeps telling Barbara, like, we need to make her disappear because she saw our faces. And so she's like crying and she's like, no, please, like, Barbara, please. Like, imagine going to high school with someone and this is like the conversation you're hearing. And Barbara's just super chill. She's like, yeah, sounds good. Yeah.
So did they arrest Barbara later?
Yeah. So they drive to a wooded area near a river and Jack demanded Margaret undress. And she kept saying no. And so Jack punched her in the face and made Barbara help him undress Margaret and asked Barbara, like, hey, do you want to come into the woods with us? And she was like, no, I'm good. And so Jack grabs Margaret and drags her into the woods. He took a steel rod from the car. And he took her undergarments. So he drags her into the woods. He beat her with that steel rod. And he took her bra, wrapped it around her neck, and strangled her. So this is very interesting. This is kind of like his telltale sign. Is he loves to strangle women with their own articles of clothing. So he goes back to the car. And Barbara's like, well, what happened? And he's like, listen, I took care of it. That's it. That's all you need to know. And they just like leave. 3 weeks later, hunters found her body. And she was strangled with her own bra. Now, of course, investigators immediately start going crazy on this case. Because the knot itself was weird. So I have some sources say that, you know, it just kind of looked like a convenient knot. Maybe this is the way he knots things. And then other sources say, oh, this was cruel. Like, the knot was made so that he could kind of tighten and loosen the grip on her neck. So it kind of goes with, you know, people saying that he is a very sadistic
person. I think I know
person.
Exactly which knot you're talking about.
Okay, why?
No, it's just a very convenient knot. It's you take a rope, bend it in half, and mm-hmm. then you just put the other end through the little hole.
Oh,
you know what I'm talking
about?
You can pull tighter or you can mm-hmm. release it. Maybe that's what
maybe,
it is.
Yes.
Very convenient.
So it's weird to say if it's conveniency or like that's just how he likes it or if it's to be sadistic. So I think that's where like the question is in the air. But there is not a question of this is a really unique situation. I haven't really heard of a lot of people getting like killing someone by strangling them with their own bra. It's just really odd. And so she was found by these hunters and he still is going on with his life, acting like nothing freaking happened. So he starts hanging out with another girl by the name of Maria. So Maria and Barbara and Jack, they're all friends now. And Maria is 16 years old. They rob a jewelry store together. And now they're like, oh my God, like, what do? We just robbed this jewelry store. Let's flee to Switzerland. So they move to Switzerland. And that's when they're like, hey, we spent all of this money that we just like robbed this jewelry store from. Like, what are we going to do now? And Maria's like, you know, my parents love me. Like, maybe we can write a ransom note and we can have some money dropped off at a location. We pick it up. Now we got cash. So they come up with this plan. They send a ransom note pretending like, oh, I'm holding her captive. Like, you're never going to see her. You got to give us this money. And the parents, of course, are like, absolutely. I will give you any money. I want to see my daughter. So they agree to pay the ransom. But what they weren't told was that the police were involved. So mm-hmm. when Jack and Barbara go to pick up the money, the police are there and they get arrested. So immediately, Barbara, I mean, she starts singing like a canary. She's like, not only did we rob a jewelry store, not only did we fake this ransom, but like we also robbed another girl and she's missing and y'all just found her in the woods. And like, I just want to say, I never went into the woods. I didn't know he was killing her. I thought he was just like, I don't know, doing that thing where you blindfold them, turn them around like 30 times and then just like push them down and then run so they get disoriented. I thought that's what he was doing. But now I know she's dead. And so the police are like, what? So they immediately go to Jack and he's like, oh yeah, I did do that. Oops. So they're like, you're arrested, dude. Now, during this time, remember Maritza's death? Maritza Horvath's the maid. Mm-hmm. Well, the investigators, all they had was the necktie. And they're just thinking, I mean, this is weird. It's too very similar, right? It's similar. They're found, you know, naked or partially naked. They're found, you know, kind of tied up by clothing articles, like mm-hmm. articles of clothing. It's just weird. And so they went to go question Jack. The same detective that was on her case went to go interview Jack in prison. And Jack's like, listen, I don't know what you're talking about. But there was multiple times where Jack lied about things. Like he would say, I've never even been to that town. But there's evidence that Jack Unterweger has been in that town. He was actually arrested near that town. But that's not really enough evidence. So they couldn't charge them for Maritza's death. Only Margaret's. So he gets, you know, he's going to trial for Margaret's death and he confesses. He's like, listen, I dragged her into the woods and here's what happened. I just kept seeing my mother's face. This sex worker mother who abandoned me. Ooh, evil, right? First of all, that narrative is so disgusting. Oh, she's just so evil and I kept seeing her face and so I kept beating Margaret because all of this trauma of being abandoned as a kid was just overcoming my body and it was like, I couldn't even control myself. Like I wasn't even thinking. It's like I blacked out. And I murdered her. And he asked the judge to have sympathy for him because of his childhood struggles. And they did not care at all. Like the judge, the jury, they were like, nope. And they convicted him of murdering Margaret Schaefer. And he was declared insane by a psychologist. They said that he was a, and I quote, sexually sadistic psychopath with narcissistic and histrionic tendencies prone to fits of anger and rage.
Yeah, that sounds about right with, you know, everything that he did.
So he gets sent to prison for life. And that's when he starts educating himself. He becomes literate. He becomes, you know, more like he's learning. He learns how to read and write by himself. He took writing classes in prison. He became the editor of the prison's magazine.
So he actually learned all that.
Yeah. Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
To a degree, prison reform worked.
Yes, to a very slight degree if he wasn't and a sexually sadistic psychopath.
Yeah, he took it to the next level.
Yeah, so like that's why I'm saying prison reform works. But like this situation, because he's a sexually sadistic psychopath with all of these tendencies, it doesn't work. There's no way it would work for him. I don't think anything would work for this guy. And so he starts writing. He became the editor of the prison's magazine. Do prisons have magazines in the U.S.? I feel like they don't. Like, is it like a newspaper club, like a high school, like a
that's pretty a newspaper interesting.
Team? So okay. He's like the editor. So everyone just kept telling him in prison that he has the gift of words. And this is when he started really getting in his head. He's thinking to himself, you know what really bothered me about being in court in front of that judge? Everyone's looking at me like I'm just like this stupid savage. Like I'm just like I'm trying to explain to them that I didn't kill her because I wanted to. I was just really bored that day and no one's listening. Like, he's just really upset that he was treated like dirt in court. And so he's like, you know what? I'm going to try to change that. I don't like that. I don't like that people are looking at me like I'm this just stupid murderer, and I'm not. And so he starts writing, and now we're caught up to speed. So he's writing all that shit. People love it. They petition. He's out. He's the poster child for prison reform. And now he's even a journalist, a reporter. And his favorite topic to report on is European sex work. You know, what's going on there? What's the dangers of it? What's the reality of it? All of that jazz. So at this point, he has murdered at least one person. We presume two. Mm-hmm. And he's a free man just running around. And the crazy thing is people know. People know that he murdered someone. I think that's the craziest part. So September 1990, he goes to Prague and he's doing this like search story for the red light district there. And he's just trying to understand like what is the normal day to day? What's going on there? He takes a translator with him and all day they talk to sex workers. They talk to pimps. They're learning about the lifestyle, about the work itself. So during the time that he's there, a woman goes missing. Her name is Blanka Bachkova. And it was a Friday night. She's out with friends to have a drink like you would do on Friday nights before the pandemic. And she was married. She had two kids. Now, this is again where it kind of gets lost in translation. So some sources say that she was in an open relationship with her husband. Some say that she was maybe having an affair. Some say that she was actually in sex work and her husband knew about it. But either way, it wouldn't be the most abnormal thing for Blanka to be talking to a man on a Friday night. So she's talking to some guys and her friends don't really think of it. And her friends are like, hey, I'm about to leave. Like, is that fine? And she's like, yeah, I'm just going to go to another bar and then I'm going to call it a night. So she goes on over to another bar and that's where she meets Jack and they start chatting it up. So she never gets back home that night. And her husband, her kids, they all start worrying. And it wasn't until September 15th, 1990, there were early morning hikers. And they're just enjoying like a local river walk. And they're walking around. And they find the body. They find a body and they're like, what's going on? So for a really long time, nobody had any idea what happened to Blanka. Like, her family had no answers. The police were like, well, I'm sure maybe she just like ran out on you guys. I mean, she's an adult. She can do whatever she wants. And that's when they're like, wait. This might be Blanka. So they get to the scene. She's on her back. Her legs are spread wide open. She has gray stockings that were used to, people think that it was used to strangle her, but it had been kind of like removed. So it wasn't like neatly tied around her neck. There were leaves over parts of her body that was naked and she had bruises and cuts all over her. So again, they keep going back to the friends and they're like, who did you see Blanka with? Like, before you guys left the bar, did anyone see her talking to someone? And all they could say was, I don't really remember. I mean, I think it was a guy in his 40s. Like, maybe that was the last person, but who knows? Maybe they stopped talking. She talked to somebody else. We don't really know. So this was Jack's first murder since he was released. And it seemed like he wasn't reformed at all, to be honest, obviously. And so during this, he gets busy. He's like, listen, I'm murdering on the side, but I still need to keep up with appearances. So he starts working on a play production called Dungeon. This was going to be the sequel to Purgatory, his memoir about himself. So he's like, I'm going to do this play. It's going to be amazing. And I'm going to tour Europe for this play. And it's just going to be my big break. Like, I'm going to break out. Even the Americans are going to be like, we want this in fucking Hollywood on Broadway. He was excited. But then he found out no one was really talking about it. Nobody really gave a fork now. They were like, listen, give us something new. Like, stop talking about your childhood. Like, we're kind of over it now. Now that, like, what we wanted from you is out and it's done, like, just give us something new. And so there was not enough financial success. There was not enough just praise. And he was super pissed that not everyone was, like, licking his toes. That's what he was expecting. Everyone to just eat this up like they did his, you know, autobiographies. So he starts heading to Graz, Austria. And this is where more sex workers go missing. There was Brynhilde Masser. She was reported missing. And this one was weird. So a lot of the police in Graz, like, sex work is highly regulated there. So they knew most of the sex workers. It's not like they were hiding it like you would do in the States. They were registered and people knew who they were. So it's technically more safe. So Brynhilde, she had been a sex worker for the past 10 years. I mean, she was really loved by the community, by friends, by family. She had, you know, this big circle of people who loved her. And she knew most of the clients in Graz, like most of the Johns in Graz. And so the day that she goes missing, everyone's like, oh, yeah, I remember. She was like talking to a local taxi driver, but I think he drove away. And that was about it. So then 2 months later, she was found dead in the woods. And she was naked from the waist down. She was strangled and her own stockings were wrapped around her neck and she was badly beaten. Jewelry is a weird thing, okay? I used to work in the jewelry industry before whatever I'm doing now. And I just have to say, sometimes you want to keep up with the trends. Like, you see all these people layering these gold necklaces, or maybe they have gold stacking rings, and you're like, oh, I want that. But if you get it from a cheap place, you're like, ah, I know that this quality is really, really bad. It's going to turn my finger green. I'm never going to wear it again. And you'll just put it in the corner. Or you're like, I don't want to spend a bajillion dollars on jewelry. I have the solution for you. I have been wearing Ana Luisa pieces for like 2 years now. It's amazing. They have an assortment of necklaces, earrings, rings, bracelets, really everything that you need. And the best part is they're carbon neutral. They offset 100% of their carbon emissions, starting with the sourcing of their raw materials all the way to the disposal of their pieces. They also have limited batches. They have the highest production standards while eliminating excessive waste. Maybe you're on the other spectrum and you're like, well, tell me about the quality. They have amazing quality, like truly amazing. They have lasting pieces that are crafted with care from the best noble metals. They offer a 360 65-day warranty to replace or refund any piece that doesn't meet your expectations. And they have really fair prices. So jewelry starts at just $39. There's no crazy luxury markup. The pieces are amazing for you or for a gift. I actually started with friendship bracelets with my good friend with Ana Luisa, and here's my new favorite piece from them. It's called Nugget. Yes, Nugget. It's a gold necklace and it's the cutest little shape of a nugget. So if you have ever called your significant other my little nugget, or maybe you're like, hey, I love chicken nuggets and so do you, I think that this is such a cute little gift. And it's only $75 and it's 100% made from recycled sterling silver. It feels good on the neck. It doesn't feel like it's gonna snap if I tug at it. It's also plated in 14 karat gold. Go treat yourself or your loved ones with a unique gift and get 10% off at analuisa.com/run. I absolutely recommend them. They're a great brand and they make beautiful, sustainable jewelry. So go check out analuisa.com/rotten. So then more and more people start showing up, like more and more bodies of women were showing up in the woods, and a lot of them were in the sex work industry, and nobody knew who was doing this. I mean, it's very clear as day that it was one or maybe two people doing it, but it wasn't like, oh, this is very separate from this incident and this murder is separate from this one. This was all connected. I mean, just the way that they were found either naked or partially naked, strangled by an article of clothing with some things missing. I mean, it's just clear as day. Like, we've got a serial killer on her hands. So Everyone's getting stressed out. They kept calling him the Vienna Woods Strangler, the Vienna Woods Killer, the Vienna Strangler, all of that, right? They're just trying to get a handle. What's his name? What are we going to call him? And so people are freaking out. But one person who wasn't was the detective on Maritza's case. Do you remember him? From decades ago, before He was even convicted of his first murder of Margaret.
Yes.
And he went to go talk to Jack and he was lying, but he had no evidence, so he couldn't even charge him. This is supposedly, you know, Jack's first murder in the history of his life, right? Mm-hmm. So the detectives, I mean, he was dead on. He was like, listen, this sounds too similar to the way that I found Maritza.
So he's saying all of these new murders.
Yeah.
He had a feeling. He's like, this is Jack's work.
Yeah. He's like, it's gotta be. Wow. It's gotta be. And so he's trying to talk to people about it and no one's listening to him, especially because Jack is just living his life. It's not like Jack just fell off the radar and people are like, ooh, maybe it is. Like, where did he even go? Right. Mm-hmm. But like at this point, Dungeon, his play had failed, but he started a new one called Scream of Fear. And that was a play about AIDS because he had lost a lot of friends in prison about it. And he wanted to bring awareness to it. So like, wow. Fuck, it's like, okay, that one's like good, but like, I still hate you, Jack. And like, no. So yeah, it premiered in Vienna and he traveled to a bunch of other places to tour it. Now, there's no indication that this was as big of a failure as Dungeon, but there's no indication that it was highly regarded either. So it kind of like fell in the middle, I think. And this is when, around this time, as he's traveling, more sex workers disappear. Now, there was one woman by the name of Alfreda. Now, her situation is interesting because there was a difference. Something he did was different. He didn't just kill her and leave her in the woods and strangle her. He actually called her parents and taunted her about the fact that Alfreda was a sex worker. Now, this is where it gets even scarier. Her parents have an unlisted number. So like in phone books, you can't find their family's number. So That probably means that he forced her to tell them their number before strangling her to death. So there's not really a reason why he did this. A lot of people suspect that his violence towards women increases with more failures he has in his professional life. So maybe, you know, Scream of Fear wasn't doing well, so he decided to take it out on women and became even more sadistic. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of what people speculate.
The telephone was invented back in the day.
But he doesn't do that for his future murders. Oh, that's where it gets weird. So then more sex workers go missing. I mean, it's just like at this point, all the police are getting really stressed out. But another thing is that you're dealing with a lot of different police jurisdictions. It's not all in the same town.
Yeah.
Now, at this point, collectively, the whole country of Austria was kind of getting stressed out. Like, they're like, what's going on? Why are these women showing up in the woods? Is there something going on with our sex work industry? Because we're trying to make it highly regulated to make it safe. But is that just backfiring? Like, what's going on? And so Jack's like, listen, I can be helpful. I can go and I can interview these scared sex workers at the red light district. And like, I hate the fact that I'm like saying sex workers 5 million times today. Sorry. I can go interview these women at the red light district about these crimes because I'm a journalist. So He starts writing about the very disappearances and murders that he's committing. In 8 months, he killed 7 women.
But nobody knew.
Nobody knew. So, I mean, in 8 months, he killed 7 women, but a lot of the times their bodies weren't found until way later, or, you know, it was just like this whole thing. So people are still stressed, and a lot of people claim that he was Austria's first serial killer. Now, I don't know if this is factually correct, but it just seemed like it hadn't really developed in a way that they were like, oh, this is a serial killer. We know the exact protocols for this. Like, we know exactly how to profile them. It just wasn't that advanced because people didn't have serial killers in Austria to the extent that maybe America did at the time. And so again, the detective that was investigating Maritza's murder, the very first murder that Jack is suspected of doing, he's retired at this point. And this was 18 years ago. Like, this was a long time ago. But he keeps going to all of these police departments and he's saying, listen, this is just too similar to the way Maritza and Margaret were found. And I'm telling you, it's got to be Jack Unterweger. And he even called the homicide division in Vienna and they were just saying, like, there's no way. Like, that doesn't make any sense. Like, you're kind of crazy, dude. Like, I get it. You're bored. You're retired now, but you need to get a job. Like, you need to, like, find a life. Like, get out of here. And he's like, no, I'm certain that this is him. And they're like, all right, old man, like, stop giving us trouble. They hang up on him. Now, around this time, a man walks into the police headquarters in Vienna and he says, listen, I'd like to talk to the chief of police. And so the chief comes out and he says, yeah, what do you want? And he says, listen, I'm a journalist and I'm working on the story about the sex worker slayings is what he called it. And I just want to get some information. So at first, the chief was kind of like skeptical because he's like, I don't want to give out too much information to the press. But then this man, this reporter, shared this really touching story about how his aunt was a sex worker who was murdered. And he was like, damn, like, tough luck. Like, yeah, I get it. Like, I can see why this is an emotional case for you. Like, I can see it. So they sit down together and he's like, man, you look so familiar. Have I seen you anywhere? And he's like, not thinking too deep into it, but he just gives them the evidence of there's no hard evidence that we found at the crime scenes. It's probably because the time of the murder versus the time that we find the bodies is different. So there's, you know, any evidence that could have been there is probably not there or is tainted now. So, I mean, we're just kind of confused. Like, that's what they're saying. Like, we're just kind of in over our heads right now. And he's like, okay, well, thanks so much. So then the reporter goes home. So the police chief doesn't think anything of it, and he goes home.
So the police chief doesn't even know that's Jack.
Yeah, he just like is like.
But does he know who Jack is?
Yes.
Because the other detective keep calling.
And wow. So he goes home and he sees that same reporter on TV talking about the news that he gave him, which is fine. Like, he knew he was going to talk about it. That's what reporters do. And his wife is sitting there and he's like, oh my God, it's that guy. And he's like, what guy? And she's like, that guy, the prison reform guy. What? The one who, he like murdered an 18-year-old girl, but he like wrote books and he's like changed now. Yeah, that's the guy. I remember him from the news. And so he's like confused. Like, so for some reason, he didn't know during this interview, like it didn't click that Jack Unterweger was him. Like, he just looked familiar, but I guess he wasn't that into Jack
Unterweger. What a police chief that has no idea about. Your job is to connect these pieces.
And he's like,
oh, cool. Sounds good, wife.
You know what they say? Behind every dude is is a much smarter woman.
You're watching a lot of TV, huh?
He's like, wait a minute. So he starts just watching all of Jack's little reportings on TV. And he's like, you know what? Something about him's kind of giving me an icky feeling. And what the detectives calls, I'm gonna surveil him. So he puts a team up to surveillance Jack for a couple of days. And they come back and they report. He's totally just like a boring ass dude. Like, he goes to coffee shops now and he like sits there and like pretends to be writing in like a journal, all like deep and shit. And like, there's always girls around him. Like, he's just a normal dude. So he's like, oh, okay, fine. Never mind.
So he knew that's Jack.
Yeah. So at that point, he like got surveillance on him, you know?
Okay.
And he was like, oh, he's totally fine. Okay, fine. And he just like goes back to looking for the Vienna Wood Strangler. And that's when Jack comes back to the police chief and he says, what's up, chief? I've got something to tell you. So I'm going to be traveling to Los Angeles. And I was wondering if you have any contacts at the LAPD, because I'd love to do some ride alongs. So my entire thing there is I'm going to go and I'm going to write a story on sex work in Los Angeles. And it's going to be like a whole thing. Maybe, you know, stay at the Cecil Hotel. Have you heard of that one? He didn't say that, but you know what I mean. And so he's like, yeah, sorry, don't have any, you know, leads, but like, good luck. And so he's like, okay, bye. So he arrives at LAX with a dream and his cardigan. Party in the US. I had to speak that one. He's looking at me like, I know that from somewhere. Where do I know that? It's the land of fame excess, you know? Ooh. party in the USA. All right. So he checks into the Cecil Hotel. And now some people speculate that maybe he had a fascination with the Night Stalker. And the reason that people speculate this is the same reason that people think that Richard Ramirez definitively stayed at the Cecil Hotel, which is someone said that he did. Uh-huh. So a night clerk said that Richard Ramirez stayed on the 14th floor. And with this situation, someone said that he requested the same room that Richard Ramirez stayed in. So I'm not entirely sure if that's why he went. It could be also because it was super close to Skid Row, where there was a lot of like underground sex work, because it's not legal in Los Angeles, right? Mm-hmm. So it could be that reason, or it could be the reason that it's cheap.
Have you thought of what happens if you stick all the serial killer into one room?
Yes.
Like, do they all just... Like, do the most gruesome just became dominant of the situation?
Dominant of the situation. I don't
know. Because they're all fucking sick to their minds. You know what I mean?
It's got to be like the smartest. I don't think it's the most gruesome, but it's got to... Because I feel like there's like two types of serial killers. Like, there's the ones that get away with it purely because the police are kind of shitty with catching them. Mm-hmm. And they're not necessarily the smartest, and they're not even trying not to get caught. And then you have the other side, where they're very either charming, or maybe they have high IQs and they try to be smart with it, or they're like BTK and they're like family men, right? Mm-hmm. So yeah. I wonder, like, what do those two groups, what would they do? I guess we'll find out when we go to hell. So see y'all there. If I get there first, I'll send a postcard. Yeah, so I don't know if that's why he went there, but he starts doing a bunch of stuff. So again, I don't know why he went to Los Angeles. There's lots of reports. So the first thing that he did is he goes to meet with a bunch of people trying to find his dad. He goes into the Austrian community in Los Angeles, and he's like, hey, like, I'm Austrian, help someone out.
So he really go for the looking for his father
type situation. Yeah.
Wow.
So he did have a brief
but
little
moment.
But
that's not really his real intention,
it
right?
Doesn't seem like it. Or maybe it's like one of those trips that's like five birds, one stone, right? So he's like, I'm trying to look for my dad, like, I don't even know where to start. So they offer their help, and you know, they start looking and looking, and they tell him, hey, I don't know how to tell you this, but I don't really know where your dad is. Like, nobody knows who your dad is. I couldn't find any contacts who would have that type of information, so I don't know what to tell.
What's
you
his dad's name?
Jack Becker.
Becker. Jack Becker. How many Jack Becker is there?
I know.
Right?
Yeah. So, I mean, yeah. So they were just like, I don't know what to tell you. And also, that was like a while ago. And so they're like, we can't help you. So he's like, okay, that's fine. He like takes LA tours. Like, you know, those buses and shit. Like, he was doing all of that. So, like, at the same time, I'm like, I don't know if he's sad. What's going on? So, Shannon Exley was the first murder in Los Angeles. She was a sex worker. Her clientele was mainly truck drivers near Skid Row. So, a car drives up, and he had asked, like, how much? So, she gets into the car. Now, this is around the time that she would just, most of the customers, they would just drive over to like a warehouse parking lot, and that's where everything would go down and the transaction would be done, I guess. I don't know how to explain it, sorry. Yeah. And but this time it was different. He kept driving towards Boyle Heights, which is like a different city, like a different part of LA, and she's like, this is really far. And he didn't think anything of it. He was just like, it's fine, like, I just want to get like a very intimate place, obviously I'll pay you for your time, blah 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 blah. And the next day, her body was found in a parking lot. She was almost entirely naked. Her bra was wrapped tightly around her neck, and this was his first victim in Los Angeles. After this happens, he starts getting ride-alongs. A call came, and they were like, hey, the LAPD, they agreed to give you a ride-along, to give you, you know, something to talk about with that Austrian PD, like with the Austrian newspapers. Maybe little Austria needs to know how the big boys do it in the LAPD. Like, they were just like, yeah, we'll totally give you a ride-along. So he goes on a four-hour ride-along, just like looking around. I mean, they primarily stayed in the downtown area. There's a picture of him with a sergeant from the LAPD.
Wow.
He like took notes, he like took pictures all over downtown LA. It's a lot. Then he would go out of the car and he would interview sex workers and pimps in the area and try to get a good story. And then, you know, this was like his plan. So the next day he goes on another ride along, and that's when he picks up afterwards he gets in his own car, no LAPD involved, and he picks up a woman by the name of Irene Rodriguez, and she too was a sex worker. And this is really sad because she had only been in LA for 2 months at the time. She just came from El Paso, Texas, and she had become addicted to heroin, which is why she was, you know, in sex work. So he drives her again to Boyle Heights, and they park in a secluded area, and she too was found strangled with her own bra the next day. So a few days later, Jack Unterweger. He drives to Malibu. Now, I don't know how he got this address, but there was an address for an Austrian filmmaker, and Jack goes to his house. Like, straight up, imagine, like, just being a filmmaker and someone's knocking on your door, like, hey, I've got a good film idea. Like, he was really pissed. Like, this filmmaker was like, what is your deal? This person was actually living in a super private area. Madonna allegedly lived across the street from him, so you're talking about, like, the rich elite of Malibu. And uh-huh. He gets this knock on the door, he opens it, and it's Jack Unterweger, and he's like, who the fork are you? How do you even know where I live? And he's like, listen, I don't mean to bother you, but I've got a major hit in Austria, you know? I wrote this book called Purgatory while I was in prison, and people loved it. It was like a film there, did really well. Uh-huh. I'm thinking you could turn it into a Hollywood hit movie. I'm talking Marvel Avengers style. You know, I'm talking, oof, you're going to make big money. And this Austrian filmmaker, I mean, imagine how many times a day these mm-hmm. filmmakers get an idea and they say, oof, you're going to make big boy money. So he's like, listen, I don't know what you're talking about. I'm already pissed off that you found my address and you thought it was okay to like show up at my house, like leave. And he's like, no, you need to listen. So he's like super adamant. So he's like, okay, you know what? Sit down. Let me listen to your stupid ass story. So he sits down with the Austrian filmmaker and he tells them this whole story. And the filmmaker says, you know, you're right. Like, I'm totally going to look into it. You know, it's a good one. I'm going to totally read your book first and I'm just going to look into it. Like, it's going to be amazing. Now, he was really only saying that so that Jack would leave. Like, you know, you're like, yeah, totally. Like, I'll follow up on it, you know? And Jack knew that. He's like, I feel like you're not going to look into it. And he's like, no, what are you talking about? That sounds amazing. Of course I'm going to look into it. And so Jack leaves and he gets into the car and he's driving from Malibu back to downtown LA, which I'm sure is like a 5-hour drive. I'm kidding, but not really, because LA traffic. And while he's sitting in traffic, he's getting angrier and angrier and angrier. He's mm-hmm. like, what do you mean? That would be the best Hollywood movie. This guy doesn't know anything. And that's when he's driving down Sunset Boulevard and he sees Sherry Long. So she was 26 and she came to LA to make it in Hollywood, but she kind of became friends with like the wrong group. She became addicted to drugs and now she was in sex work. Mm-hmm. And he picks her up. And he's like, listen, I want to drive back to Malibu. So he drives 30 miles back to Malibu. And she was found 8 days later in the mountains, naked with a bra wrapped tightly around her neck. Now, by this point, LAPD had no leads. They knew it was all the same person. But Jack Unterweger was back in Austria.
Wow.
So they're like, who the fork did this? Now, this is only like 6 years after Richard Ramirez was caught. So I'm sure they were quaking in their boots, too. So Jack leaves Los Angeles and he's super upset. Like, first of all, he didn't really get a good enough story for all of the sex work in LA because he was really busy doing other things. He couldn't find his dad. Nobody wanted to turn his book into a Hollywood movie. It just was like a shit show. So he goes back home and he starts doing more interviews. Like, he's just trying to get press time. It seems like he's unraveling. He's like, does anyone else want to hear about my book Purgatory? And everyone's like, bro, give it a rest. That's like old news. Do you got a new book or something? If not, bye, get out of here. And at this point, people were getting really upset with him because it's just like, oh Jesus, like, you know when someone's milking it too much, it's like, mm-hmm. we get it. Mm-hmm. You're saying that right now to me, I know. So they're like, we get it. And now Charletta, which was his step aunt, she was getting increasingly mad because for so many years she had heard this crazy narrative about her stepdad being just like this evil person, Jack's grandpa, right? Mm-hmm. And so she decided that she was going to confront him one day. So she sees Jack hanging out with a bunch of girls at a cafe and she's just enraged. Her anger is just boiling. So mm-hmm. she sees him, she confronts him, she runs up to him and is like, why would you tell all of these lies, blah blah blah. And he looks at all the women and is like, oh, I don't even know this girl. And she's like, oh yeah, you don't know me? And she pulls out an envelope and she's like, these are pictures of you and me and you and your grandfather that you wrote about. Like, this is you. And so mm-hmm. all the girls are like, oof, that is you. Mm-hmm. And so he looks embarrassed and he laughs it off and he says, here, let me tell you something. And he leans in, he grabs her and whispers, be quiet or something could happen to you. So she leaves and she's like, what? Mm-hmm. So she's like, I mean, I already know that he was convicted of killing someone and I am confident that this guy's evil and he's a liar. He's probably going to do it again. So I'm not going to mess with it. So she just kind of shuts up. Mm-hmm. Now, during this time, a journalist was getting involved because he found the parallels of the Vienna Wood Strangler and Margaret's death just too similar. And he's like, listen, this little reporter running around. I mean, he started researching it as if, is this Jack Unterweger or a copycat? Like, that's kind of his vibe. He's like, is this someone trying to be Jack Unterweger? Like, like, what's going on? Mm-hmm. Or is he inspired by Jack Unterweger? And so while Jack was in LA, he did a ton of research. He wrote an article that was published, and he was talking about the Vienna Wood Strangler and pretty much pointed all of the fingers at Jack without saying it was Jack. Like, pretty much like, hey, isn't it a weird coinkydink? I'm not saying it's him, but allegedly, you know what I mean? Like, all of those words. So Jack is getting nervous. Everyone around Jack is like, oh, I can see that. I can see how it's so similar. And so he goes to the police station. Jack goes back to the police station to try to fish around. He's like, I'm back from LA. It was amazing. So what's going on with the Vienna Woods Strangler? So the chief at this point had already put Jack under surveillance for the second time when he got back from LA, because he was just like, something weird's going on, right? Mm-hmm. And he was just trying to tell him, listen, you are a suspect. I'm not going to lie to you, but we've got over 100 men on the list of suspects. So, I mean, we're just going to eliminate you. I know it's not you. All you need to do is just bring in some alibis for these specific dates. Yeah. Go home, get some alibis, and come back to me. So Jack goes, he comes back, and he says, okay, well, on these days, I was here and I was there. And then he just starts breaking down at the police station, crying. And he says, there's no way I would ever commit another murder because prison was crazy. I would never go back to prison. I would never put myself in a situation where I would have to go back to prison. You've got to believe me. Mm-hmm. And so they're like, yeah, we believe you. And they look at his alibi, and it was just all weird. Like, he was like lying. He said that he was working in Vienna, but he couldn't exactly pinpoint where he was, who he talked to. Like, nobody else could confirm that he was in Vienna at the time that the Graz murders happened. So it was all sorts of weird. He also lied. He said that he didn't have a driver's license, so it's not like he could drive from Vienna to Graz like quickly or something of that sort. But they knew that he had a driver's license, so they're like, you just got your driver's license last week. I'm not going to do another song reference. Sorry, I'll stop. Driver's license, the song? Okay. So the captain is like, this is a straight up lie. We've been tailing you and we know that you have a driver's license. Like, why would you even lie about that? Like, why would you lie and say you don't have a driver's license? We could even look that up. What are you saying? And so they think if he would lie to the police chief about something like this, they need to investigate more. So as they're investigating, Jack just continues to live his life. He starts writing more stories, tries to get more famous, dating more girls. So one in particular was a woman by the name of Bianca Marac, and she was 18 years old. So she's living with her parents, and her mom is incredibly controlling. So she's like, listen, I want to leave. I want to start my own life. Like, I don't want to be under my parents' control anymore. And Jack was like, perfect, because I've got this spare bedroom that you can stay in. And she's like, okay, sounds good. So within 3 weeks of knowing him, she moves in with him. And that's when he becomes increasingly dominant, controlling, just locked her up in the house, gave her a list of chores that she had to do, and never let her out of the house. Now, he would constantly tell her, money is tight around here, money is tight. And so he said, Bianca, can you do me just one favor? She's like, what? I have this friend that I know that runs this company. It's called Upscale Escort Company. But you could just be like a waitress there. And she's like, what company? Upscale Escort Company. Just be a waitress. So she's like, I mean, I guess I could be like a hostess. Yeah, like, let me apply. So she does an interview. And that's when the person is like, oh, this is Upscale Escort Company. You're trying to be an escort, like a sex worker, no? And she's like, no, I was trying to be a waitress. A waitress where? We just work with escorts. So she's like, what the fork? So she goes to Jack. She's super pissed. She's like, I'm leaving you. Like, I'm going back home because I can't believe that you were trying to pit me out. Like, what's wrong with you? Like, why would you even do this? And he's like, no, baby, no. Like, I'll never do it again. And so she's like, okay, fine. So they stay together. She's still living with him. And 1 month into living together, he proposes to her. So I don't necessarily know what the motive in this proposal was, whether it was love, whether he just like wanted to tie her down.
Probably control, right?
Control her. Yeah, it was just out of the blue, right? So she accepts and she's like happily engaged. She starts working as a bartender. And I think maybe his plan was to eventually pimp her out. But during this time, the police are amping up their investigation. They're going around showing pictures of Jack to a lot of women in sex work. And all of them are IDing them as a guy who they have seen all of these missing women talk to before. They're like, that's the guy. One of these women said, that guy tried to kidnap me. Like, that guy, I got into his car and he was like, I'm just going to drive into the woods. And I was like, not with what's going on these days. And she was like, let me out. And he was like, no. And it was just like this whole ordeal. So the press find out that the police are investigating Jack Unterweger, and they are blowing it up. And they start asking Jack for comments, and he decides that he needs to leave Austria. So he flees to Switzerland with Bianca. And the more that he's doing this and the more that they're investigating, the more the police realize this is probably Jack. So this is a huge task force. You have the Vienna task force. You had the Graz task force. You also had the detective that was working on Maritza's case. There was just a lot of people involved. Mm-hmm. Now, there were tons of issues with the arrest warrant, but eventually they got one and the press got wind of it. And they said, you cannot release this information. And they said, we won't. But immediately the next day on the stands, on the newspapers, were murder series, arrest warrant for Jack Unterweger.
Oh my God.
So by the time that they go to arrest Jack Unterweger, he's already gone. They broke into his apartment. They found a shotgun, a switchblade. These are two items that he can't have because he's on parole. So he's not allowed to own these. They found inside of his BMW a hair that he found of a woman. They sent it in for testing and it did match to be one of the victims. They found three pairs of handcuffs. They found receipts and pictures of him with the LAPD. That's never a good look. Just like posing next to the sergeant of LAPD. A brown leather jacket, a red scarf. Later, they would do testing on the leather jacket and the red scarf. And the fibers matched fibers that were on Heidi Marie, a victim of his when she passed. So all of this was making sense. Now, when they saw those pictures of him with LAPD, they were like, why don't we just like give them a call? So they call LAPD and they asked, hey, by any chance, do you guys have any unsolved murders over there that a woman was, you know, if they were in the sex work industry, they were strangled with articles of their own clothing. And they were like, yes, we do have three sex workers who were strangled by their own bras. So they were like, huh. So during this time, the couple, they're fleeing. They go from Switzerland to France to Spain. I don't know why this just sounds so like, I know, I can't glamorize it, but like these countries always sound so fancy. Whereas here it's like, then they went to Florida. Anyways, so they get on a plane to New York. They're like, we need to flee the country. We need to get out of Europe. Like, this is too close. We need to go all the way to a different continent. So they leave. They get on a plane to New York. And then from New York, they get to Miami. They go to Florida. So I guess it always ends in Florida. So they land February 16th. And Jack gets Bianca a job as a go-go dancer at a club. So she's working. She's making money. And he's just obsessed with the case. He's like looking for more information. Like, oh my God, are they going to try to catch me? Do they know I'm in Miami, right? And this is where it all unravels. Honestly, I do think that in Miami, he would not have gotten caught unless he did these stupid things. So he starts getting upset with the way that the police are telling the story. They're saying, listen, he was never reformed, that little scumbag. Was his mom even a sex worker? What's wrong with this dude? They're just saying some nasty shit. And he's like, well, what about my story? What mm-hmm. about me? What about what I have to say?
Yeah.
Do people not want to listen to me talk? And so he gets really mad. So he starts writing letters to Austria, like public radio stations, just like claiming that he's innocent. And this is the police trying to get after him. This is the other political party trying to say that prison reform doesn't work. He's coming up with all these conspiracy theories. So he calls up one of his friends who worked for a magazine called Success, I think, something like that. And she said, listen, I would love to run an exclusive story on you while you're on the run. And we will pay you $10,000 for the exclusivity to the rights of your little fleeing story. And he's like, this is amazing. Okay, yeah, like, how are you gonna send me the money? They're like, obviously we could wire it to you. And he's like, okay, let me give you my bank information. A part of that bank information was the U.S. bank in Miami, Florida. And they immediately gave it to the police. So Miami, Florida, they get the Miami PD involved and they go and they arrest him because they literally went straight to the bank. So he's waiting outside while Bianca went inside to withdraw the $10,000 in cash.
Mm-hmm.
And so they had U.S. Marshals all undercover wearing like plain clothes outside. And he was sitting out there and he's like, oh, this is weird. Why is everyone weird? Like, it feels like I'm in like a parallel universe. Nobody's going into the bank. They're just all kind of glancing at me, reading newspapers, all weird. So he starts looking around. Bianca comes out with the cash and he just yells, run. Uh-huh. And she has no idea what he's saying. So she's like, what? And he was already booking it. So he's running in the opposite direction, running down the street. Squad cars come. They block both of them. They arrest both. And now he's being extradited back to Austria.
Narcissist personality is what got him.
That's what I'm saying. He could have totally like laid it low in Miami, Florida. I really don't think that, I mean, maybe he would have gotten caught, but definitely not this easily.
Yeah.
Yeah. So he gets extradited to Vienna, and in May 1992 is his trial. He was on the run for only 3 months, and he comes up with this plan to get him out of jail. He's like, I don't like jail. I hate jail. I hate prison. So he sneaks in a razor, and he cuts open a vein on his arm, and he gets sent to a hospital for it. Now, a lot of people don't have sympathy for this because it was, people say it was strategically cut. Yeah. So I guess there is a way that you strategically cut it where you don't die, but you lose lots of blood, if that makes sense. Or it looks like it's a lot of blood. I'm not entirely sure, right? And so, yeah, it didn't work. They were like, yeah, we know what you're doing. They bandaged him up and they sent him back to prison. So trial starts in 2 years. So he's just sitting in prison for these 2 years. Mm-hmm. Now, Austria is very interesting because you can be tried for other crimes committed in other countries. I don't know if it's still like this, but in 1992, that was kind of like the whole thing, right? So the murders in Prague and Los Angeles, like they had FBI and LAPD fly to Austria to testify.
Wow.
Yeah.
This is an international case.
Yeah. And so Jack's whole defense, you guessed it, preppy killer defense. I'm a celebrity. I don't need to hire sex workers. I'm rich. I'm famous. I get sex anytime I want it. Why would I ever rape or murder someone when I'm rich? Where's the logic in that? So many people use that. And I'm like, you have no brain cells. He even bragged about how he slept with 150 different women in the past 2 years. And he's like, why would I need to murder people? I have everything you'd want. Fame, sex, women, money. Ooh, a Rolex. Yeah, there were a lot of women supporters. There were some women who were weeping in the court, they said. They were, you know, saying, this man, this is a political agenda that's happening. Like, this is unfair. This is my Jack Untavega, my darling. So after 2 months, he was convicted of 9 of the 11 murders, and he was sentenced to several life sentences. But that would never get carried out because the next morning, he hung himself in prison. He took the string of his pants and he tied it into knots that were very similar to the knots that were found on the woman. And he hung himself from like a coat hook, which I'm also like, why is there a coat hook? They're like, prisoners, get your coats. I don't know. There was a coat hook and he hung himself. And the press called it his best murder yet. Sounds weird. I think this is a situation of, rich people are weird. Like, I don't know what else to say. This could have all been avoided if these upper elites didn't have to get so obsessed over, wow, the literary potential. Like, fine, if he's got potential, you can write books from prison.
Yeah.
Write some more books then, Jacko. You don't have to make him come out of prison.
Yeah.
And he stayed at the Cecil, allegedly in the same room as Richard Ramirez, who allegedly stayed at the Cecil. That hotel has been through some shit. Let me know, what are your thoughts on this case? And I know it's a little bit confusing because the sources on this one are really just weird. Either it's not in English or it's by Jack. So I hope you guys enjoyed, and I'll see you guys on Wednesday. Bye.
Bye.